Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
All right, on this week's Media Project, we answer the question, who is more popular, Alan Chartok or Donald Trump? No, not really. Anyway, welcome to the Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union.
The obligatory first shot.
That was a good one.
Well, here's Rosemary Arameo, head of the journalism faculty at UAlbany.
Hello.
How do, investigative journalist, former editor, et cetera, and Dr. Alan Chartok, he himself, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, man about Central Avenue. Sir.
You said it all.
I do. Therefore, people should stand and applaud for me, too. The way they apparently did for the president. Yes. So here's the question. I mean, we've all heard day by day there are new reports about President Trump's obsession with his popularity, seemingly. An interview with ABC News where he talks about the total home run that was his speech at the CIA and so on. How do you appropriately cover this kind of thing? What do you do?
Well, the first question I have is the applauders themselves. Does he bring them? So now you have a press conference, his press conference, and they're applauding him. Now, we know that the reporters in the room weren't doing the applauding, so who was doing the applauding? Well, he was bringing his own people in to do the applauding. I don't know what he did over there at Foggy Bottom or wherever he was, or at the CIA.
So we need to report that out. We need to be able to tell people what it is they're hearing and seeing, right?
That's well,
what
yeah.
His clack.
His clack.
New word.
Exactly.
C-L-A-Q-U-E.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the people you bring in to applaud for you.
Absolutely. And then the difficulty, of course, of trying to decide how you actually go about reporting. And this is probably one of the major themes of our conversation today. It needs to be because different respected journalism organizations are taking different approaches to describing the apparent inaccuracies. How was that for a euphemism?
That was good.
Apparent lies.
Oh, there you go. That is the question. NPR says we're not going to call it lies. New York Times says we are. What do we think?
Well, you know, Rosemary and the whole group on our early morning roundtable program, the panel, have been talking about this a good deal. Right, Rosemary?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Some people say in order for it to be a lie, even if it's not true, it has to be purposeful. In other words, the person who is doing the utterance has to know that they are lying. And that, to me, seems absurd. Because then, you know, how do you know? Do you get a Trudeau-like thing with Ronald Reagan where he goes inside the guy's brain? Can you do that? No, you can't.
Well, that came from Mary Louise Kelly of NPR, who went to the Oxford English Dictionary, and the definition of lie was a false statement made with intent to deceive.
Right.
So the reason NPR avoids it, in part, is because they don't know what's in his heart.
Well, I hope that's the reason they
ended
it.
The other reason may be that they're trying to protect their franchise, which,
yes.
Which the Republicans have said they
well, I think
want to defund.
Another reason, too, and that is one that actually was articulated by Mike Oreskes, the senior vice president of NPR.
And all of our friends.
He says that if you start with a word like lie, you push people away from you. And I do think that there's a responsibility of journalists to try to make people understand what you're saying, to bring in an audience. After all, if you write at a PhD level, which we all know, but with one in the room means that you're very smart.
Which is interesting because he's the one person who speaks directly to the people.
Ah, yes. Speaks directly to the people, that PhD man. If you write at a PhD level, you will lose a lot of your audience. So we try to write at a level that's appropriate for people to understand. And similarly, isn't the word lie something that is a problem in that regard?
I think it's a problem. I have no problem calling him both a liar and possibly mentally ill. But I'm a liberal and I don't like any of activist policies. I am a well-known Hillary supporter. I have no problem doing it. When I say it, however, I immediately shut off all the people who support him. They think it's just my bias. When Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize-winning columnist for the New York Times and a well-known liberal, wrote in a tweet yesterday that Trump is the first man openly mentally ill on his first day we've ever put into office, it was dismissed. It did not have the power that saying the president is crazy had. And that's the same thing with lying. So much better to say the president thinks there's massive voter fraud, 56 secretaries of state, his own lawyer, and everyone in the country can find no evidence to support that. Isn't that better than saying he's lying? Better than saying he's deceiving us?
I don't know, because I don't know what the impact is. Let's take an example which really has nothing to do with Trump at all. Let's take Hitler. Hitler comes into...
Nothing to do with Trump. That would be weakening the impact of the Nazis.
Hitler comes into office. He lies. He takes over. And people look the other way. Let's just say they said in this case, he's not dangerous, he's a fool, who cares, and they don't do anything about it. If you say the word lie, it has a tremendous impact. Do you have a responsibility? Because remember, Rosemary, you're right. There are about 40% of the people who voted for him. That group is pretty much where they were when they were voting for him. So, but there are marginals. I mean, if 1% more in three states had voted the other way, he would not be the president. So I do think it's important to remember that there is this marginal group who are deciding, which is why his polling numbers go up and down.
When you think of the language, though, and the impact of it and the devaluing of language by consistently using the most potent of terms, you know, what gives curse words power is that we generally don't use them in polite society. It's shocking, right? The word lie, accusing the president of a lie, is shocking. And if it becomes so commonplace that it loses its shock value, the word itself becomes destabilized. And so it's like this. I remember an experiment some years ago, probably now 20 years ago, when a small newspaper in the Midwest gave over its single copy, that is the newspapers that are on the newsstand, gave over the design of the single copy to the marketing department, circulation. And the first day, it was quite a remarkable thing. There had been a barn fire, which, you know, barn fires are dramatic, but they generally just burn themselves up. They don't generally kill people because barns are set off from houses. So there had been a dramatic barn fire, and that became the huge top of the front page of the single copy edition, whereas there was some important government story that was in type on the top of the home edition.
Well, when you say single copy, what do you mean?
I just said that. Single copy is what's available on the newsstand. Yes, that's what's sold at stores and newsstands. That's okay, because people probably went by too fast for other people.
I'll have to listen to you
more
carefully.
Not just for the PhDs in the room, yes. Anyway, my point, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bogged down in this, but the fact is that for a couple of days, the design that was really lively, that had this inconsequential fire on the top, for example, sold better. And then it stopped because people got accustomed to it. They were inured to the power of that, and they started going back for the real stuff. And that, I think, is what happens if you use the word lie too much.
Well, Pete Seeger, my great hero, used to talk about pedagogy, and he used to say repetition is the basis of all pedagogy. Now, the point is, if you call a guy a liar consistently, and you're right, don't people go around and say he's a liar?
You don't even have to be right. Trump showed that in his campaign. Crooked Hillary,
that's
lying
true.
Ted, little Marco.
Crazy
Yeah, he did that whole repetition and assassination branding. He's the king of it.
And it worked.
Well,
he won.
I know. So why isn't it working with the media? Because he has also managed, his other technique was to really make people lose confidence in the media. We have had low ratings for a while, but did you see the last Pew rating? We just plummeted. No one believes us anymore. So it's just us flailing about, you know, hitting back at the mean president. And that's how we're seen, as weak and lying.
So you should stop immediately and don't call it like it is, please.
You can't. That's the difficulty.
Exactly.
And that is difficult, but the only way we can climb back out of that pit is to keep doing what we're supposed to be doing. But that is very hard. You know, I get emails every day from people attacking us for truth telling.
I feel very badly for you, or as we say in the the birches, and so don't I.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding.
I think there are things that we can do to fight back. We don't have to broadcast, as CNN did not, presidential news conferences in which Sean Spicer is yelling at the media because they didn't print lies. They didn't print the lie, the dishonest portrayal of Trump's inauguration as the biggest ever. It just simply was not true. There's photographic proof. People who were there would say it. There's just no evidence whatever except in the president's head. So, yes, we reported that the president said it, but we don't have to put the rest of the stuff in. We don't have to broadcast that. We don't have to sit there and take it.
Speaking of Spicer, that's a very interesting case because here you have a press secretary. There's already leaks that Trump doesn't like him because he thinks he's more attuned to the Republican National Committee.
And he's not telegenic enough, was the word, you know.
And he's not particularly articulate.
I don't think he's going to last. His first performance was dreadful. He is a spiteful, mean little man, and he doesn't come off well on... He doesn't come off well on television.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I was watching MSNBC one day between bouts of responsibility, and our own Chris Capostasi, who is now Chris Jensen.
Jensen. Of NBC News.
Of NBC News was saying, you know, I've covered this guy for a long time. He's a nice guy and we like him, or something like that. So that runs sort of contrary to what you were saying, but he is a guy in fear of his job. That's my point.
Do you know that he chews and swallows 35 sticks of gum before lunch?
Swallows?
Why?
Yeah, he swallows his gum. Yeah, there's a particular type of Orbit cinnamon flavored gum that he really likes, and he just says he swallows his gum. It's okay. It's not true what your mom told you that it sticks in your gut for 7 years. You don't digest it, but it does move through pretty quickly.
That's the most interesting thing I've ever heard about it.
Why? Thank you. This comes after Medical Monday, on Monday afternoon. So here we are continuing that trend.
What's the advantage? I've got to go Google this. I'm sorry, I'm checking out.
Yeah, Sean Spicer.
I can't believe it helps with moving things through. I mean.
It seems like it would gum up the works.
Yeah,
very sticky situation.
Oh, my God. Dear Allen and Company, says George from East Greenbush, on last week's media project, I wasn't here, but it said Rosemary strongly objected to fact-checking by the media, saying that it gave the appearance of attacking the candidate or office holder. She argues that was the proper role of an editor and that the fact-checking should be an integral part of the reporting in the article. The point is fine, the print media, assuming they don't rush to scoop. Far more people now get their news from television than from print, though, and much of that will be in the form of live broadcasts or press briefings or as interviews with spokesmen. Real-time fact-checking is not possible. Fact-checking after the original broadcast is a poor substitute since people see the initial lie in that. So what do you do?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I've been reading a lot about that fact-checking in the middle of a debate or in the middle of an interview, and it comes so fast and furious that the time needed to look up something, to put it in context, just doesn't exist. So you can get, like, Chuck Todd yelled at or answered back to Kellyanne Conway when she said, alternative facts. Mm-hmm. He got her on that. But she was saying other things that were just completely not right.
Well, there used to be a television commercial. I think the character's name was Joe Isuzu.
Yes.
And somebody would hold up a big sign saying, he's lying.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It was great.
I like that.
You would think that at least Comedy Central or somebody else could be covering these debates he's lying.
There is some of that does go on in television, and it's similar kind of to the way that NFL play-by-play goes on. You know, there are statisticians at work in the guts of the NFL coverage who have a particular focus, and they say, you know, okay, this person has become the expert on wide receivers, and every time that there's something that a wide receiver does, there's some statistic that this person can call up and immediately put on the screen in front of the play-by-play or color announcer.
Or punting.
Yes. Similarly, you know, you can do this, and there is some real-time fact-checking that goes on now on television. Real-time in the sense that it comes just 5-10 minutes after the event. So at least there's some value.
And you can do that, and we ought to, and we need to do that, but it is just not extremely effective. And the more lies there are in Sean Spicer's first official encounter with reporters, he had something like 4 major falsehoods. I can't recite them anymore, and fact-checking is, you know, my job. I can't remember. You can't hold that all in your head.
Yeah. I want to stick up for Rosemary here.
Do I need it?
Well, I suppose not. But I just think that it isn't one or the other. It isn't the editor writer or the reporter, but the reporter should certainly check their facts, and then that's why you have editors, right?
Yeah,
of
absolutely. Course. And if there's a hole in the story, the editor obviously ought to find it. That's why you have editors reading stories saying, wait a minute, is this true? You know, let's get this fixed. Of course, the difficulty even in print nowadays is that we need to be short. And even on digital, some people like to read long, but it makes it difficult. Digital has the advantage of being able to have hot links so that you can keep burrowing into something if you want to know what's really going on.
Like Charlie on the MTA, you may never return, though, because by the time you're following the links, you may not remember where you started.
Yes.
This is why we're all losing our minds and can't concentrate.
Did he ever return?
But that's another issue.
Yeah, I have looked this up. That number is correct, 35.
35 what?
In an August 2016 profile in the Washington Post, Sean Spicer admitted that he chews and swallows 35 sticks of Orbit cinnamon gum, usually before noon. 2.5 packs by noon, Spicer says. I talked to my doctor about it. He says, it's no problem. This might be the same doctor that Trump had, right?
Trump's doctor, yeah. He's the healthiest president we've ever had in history.
That's right, in history.
Can I say one other thing, bring up one other thing about fact-checking? You know, Kellyanne Conway rightly took a lot of heat for making that unfortunate phrase, alternative facts. But she does have a point. What you meant were other facts. You know, I can tell you something and you can answer back to me with information equally true, but it gives a different perspective. So fact-checking isn't true, false. And if you read Politico and the other newspapers and outlets that do fact-checking, you'll find, well, it's technically right, but there's context here that shows how it's misleading in the way. That's very convoluted. So fact-checking isn't thumbs up or thumbs down, that would be easy. Then you could do it. You could attack it at the source when it was happening. That's why journalism is hard. That's why we're not appreciated. Just the facts, ma'am. Yeah, try to do that. Yeah. Try to just give me just the facts, ma'am.
Just the facts. I do this all the time when I'm speaking to a class. I explain how facts lie. How what you may be reporting the facts of an event and find out that you have not given people a truth. Because if you report just what somebody says, then you have given them a true story of what transpired. But if you're not giving them the depth, the true story, as you say, fact-checking, you're not really reporting the truth, which is what the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists says. The first responsibility is seek the truth and report it as fully as possible. So truth is often different from facts.
Well, Rex, I'm glad to hear you're doing honest work in front of the class sometime.
Thank you. Henry in Cornwall, who is a retired math teacher. By the way, he finds insights that the program discusses about the media and journalism to be fascinating and informative. Isn't that nice? How
from
about
a
that?
Mathematician.
A
wow.
Yes, that's absolutely an honor. Well, and not only that, he read an article in Columbia Journalism Review by Kyle Pope, who's the new editor of CJR, who said he found it so encouraging in that it held out hope that the press corps will survive and persist in their mission to present the truth, no matter what tactics the Trump administration employs against it. He said, my fear is that Trump's disparagement of the press and the discussions about moving the White House press corps are efforts to exert extreme control of journalists and their access to government.
And we have to fight. I mean, here at the public radio station that this comes from, you may be listening in a different place, we are giving away T-shirts with the First Amendment on them, on the front of them. And we are also giving away, when I say giving away, they're premiums, a cup with the First Amendment on it. Because the First Amendment is really in danger here.
Yes.
There are tales, I don't know, Rosemary, maybe you know more about this than I do, about journalists being arrested for felonies in this country.
I thought we might talk about that today. That's horrifying. And our listeners are so smart, they sometimes veer towards nitpicking. And they'll go, well, that's not the First Amendment. That's exactly the point, is that lawyers have figured out that you can't really win if you go against the First Amendment anymore, especially if it involves a public figure, because there's 200 years of case law that has very much favored the press. So what they're doing is going around it, and they're charging reporters out covering violent events like pipeline protests and anti-Trump inauguration events, arresting them under trespass and rioting laws. So we have, what, 7 journalists now? Who are facing like 25 years in jail and big fines for burning up cars. They weren't burning up cars. They were filming and talking to people who were involved in those illegal activities.
That was on the inauguration day, by the way. Mm-hmm. Let's make clear that there were no arrests, nor was there any violence in the day of protests afterwards.
Nothing.
This is all from that. And, you know, some of these people come from significant journalism organizations who have lawyers. One is a Brooklyn-based journalist who writes for Vocative, which is a media and technology outlet. Another another one writes for RT America, which, by the way, is an affiliate of the Russia state-run television network. Here's what concerns me. These are arrests by the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington.
Right.
Now, that's a local police department controlled by the government of D.C., so I don't know that we can say that this is an action caused by the Trump administration.
No, I think there's something more concerted than that. This isn't the first time it happened, Rex. We saw this first with the Occupy Wall Street movement in New York. There were arrests under these laws. Then you saw it in the Dakotas with the pipeline protests, where there was a filmmaker famously arrested under the same law by the local county sheriff's office. When it got to the court, it was dismissed. And I suspect these charges will be dismissed because so far the courts are still independent and sane, and we'll throw it out. But there's clearly something afoot here. Maybe it's police figuring out how to deal with civic protests, of which I think we can expect more in the coming days and years.
It's the hostility that's in the air, perhaps,
huge,
right?
Hostility.
Comes,
exactly.
You know, a president sets a tone.
Sure.
And that is seemingly one of the things that concerns us, ought to concern us, is that the license for media witch hunts is certainly issued by the White House.
We have all seen police and police departments being very hostile towards reporters, hanging up phones when they call, being rude, maybe a ticket or two that might not have been done otherwise. So, in fact, this is nothing new, that it's just the Metropolitan Police. But you're right, Rex. When the tone is set from the top, it's all hands on board.
And what about when the tone is one of lockdown? The Trump administration has ordered a lockdown on federal agencies. You know, it's not only that the White House website immediately lost any reference to climate change, LGBT rights, and so on. It's also that the EPA and other federal agencies suddenly are told you're not allowed to speak to the media, you're not allowed to answer any questions, or nobody is allowed to put out public-facing statements.
This is not entirely, by the way, a Republican issue. We have seen governors, we have seen others who immediately come in and they establish a very tight policy about who can talk to the press. And it goes on all the time.
That's true. We have to give it a chance. The Trump administration has said this is just while we're getting things organized. Check in with us, I think, February 7th. If after that we're still seeing it, then I change my tone.
Hey, I'm not saying it's right.
No, I know. But, I mean, it is somewhat routine, Alan. I think you're right. I'm agreeing with you. And we've yet to hear the Trump administration talk about how it will have its agencies respond to information requests. Under Barack Obama, if a reporter came in and said, I want all your records on thus and so, the agency was supposed to respond, okay. Under Bush, it was like, no, we don't think so. So what will it be under Trump? And also under Obama, we had a Department of Justice that said we're not going to jail any reporters. What will be the policy under Trump? So we have to see how this plays out. When you shut down people like this, scientists, lifelong bureaucrats, people who love what they do, who think it's important, hate it. And you are seeing, one of our callers into the roundtable mentioned this, and I checked it out. We're seeing a number of news agencies saying, hey, if you've got anything you want to tell us, here's a confidential
Absolutely.
Way to get the admission.
And let's hear it from my boys in South Dakota at the Badlands National Monument. That's where I'm from, you know.
I Good know job. That. How could we not?
National Parks. Service Badlands National Monuments immediately started tweeting, you know, with the new media, with digital media now, it's not so easy to put a cap on information.
Well, what will happen, however, is that the consequences for giving information may be terrible.
They may be, but I believe that Trump is using Putin's techniques. Putin's techniques work because he puts people in jail. He doesn't just take their jobs away or take their money away, their salary away.
Or worse than
they
jail.
Can do. He puts them into jail. Yeah.
Permanent jail.
Yeah. So maybe he wants to send the feds into Chicago. I'm trying to hold down my conspiracy theory ideas here. But so far, I think if he can just use the power of his presidency, it will fail because people will leak. They will want the real story out. We saw a story in New York Magazine this week about how kind of unbalanced Trump is, how volatile he is. It came, if you noticed, from 12 White House sources. It's the first week in office. In the White House are his closest friends and associates, and 12 of them are leaking to New York Magazine.
Yeah. Wherever there are people, there'll be leaks.
Let's hear it. Yay. We're all in favor of leaks. So that would be all we have time for today, amazingly enough. You know,
you know, I just want to talk to our fans. This ought to be an hour show. We all know it, and it's all your fault.
Well, you know, if the fund drive is coming up, I believe, you know, and if people probably contribute enough, you could probably afford to extend this by a half hour.
Yeah, we pay more.
Yeah, Rosemary and I might get a little boost.
Oh, yeah, we're rich, huh?
Hey, how about that? Thanks for joining us, the professor, the investigator, and the editor. Welcome you back next week for The Media Project.
publishers of such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.